Proposals. How do you write a good proposal? Well, first let's try to understand what they are. Proposals share a common purpose. They attempt to persuade people that your idea is a good one. Proposals range from high stakes, will you marry me, to a much lower, a text suggesting you get together with some friends at a bar. Even resumes are a kind of proposal. You're proposing that the company hire you. All of these share the essence of written proposals in business contexts. A good idea that you're trying to get others to join in on. Welcome to this podcast episode. It's on proposals. It's from chapter 10 of our new book, Business Communication, Rhetorical Situations, and that's available from broadviewpress.com. There's really three components to a successful proposal in a business context. The first is you need to establish that you're worth listening to. That is to say that you have credibility. You also need to create logical reasons. And then the third thing is you have to generate enthusiasm and emotion. You want people to join in on what you're doing. Before we get going, I just want to make one more distinction. That is between solicited proposals and unsolicited proposals. So solicited proposals are proposals that have been requested by an organization, say as a request for a proposal, or by a superior in your organization. They've asked you to create a proposal for something. An unsolicited proposal is, of course, one in which you're preparing it without being asked to. Okay, so there's three things you have to do in a proposal. One of them is logic. You have to create a series of claims and supporting evidence that you develop and organize in your proposal. And they're the reasons that somebody should adopt your proposal or join into your proposal or fund your proposal. Now, when I taught at DePaul University in Chicago, I actually created a course on grant writing, which is specifically about writing proposals. And the reason for that is, to me, it was a key genre for the community service groups. We were working with the community service learning program at that point, and it was really a key genre for people in those organizations. And I thought, you know, students in a 10-week period can pick that skill up and then apply it and help these organizations, even if their proposal doesn't get funded. And some of them did. Even if it didn't, it gave the organization a template. It gave them a sense of what they needed to learn and a skill they needed to bring on in order to get funding for the good work that they were doing. Here's an example of the logical argument from a proposal that that students generated when I taught at the University of Alberta to get funding for a greenhouse at a community gardens. So here's the section. It's called What Do We Do? Community Gardens Group has extensive experience planning and running our community garden. The growers and members have planted over 4,000 linear feet of annual crops and over 1 acre of 3 varieties of potatoes. In addition to growing produce for our members on the 6 acres we cultivated, last year we distributed over 3,000 pounds of organically grown produce to the Youth Emergency Shelter, City Food Bank, University Students Food Bank, and Meals on Wheels. So those are the reasons why somebody should fund and get behind this group. So we talked about three things: logic, credibility, and emotion. The second one is credibility then. There's really four ways in which you can establish credibility with your readers and listeners. The first one is to show readers that you're knowledgeable about your subject matter. You know what you're talking about. Many times this is done through the judicious use of technical terms that by using them, you're showing people that you know what you're talking about. Now, the second way to establish credibility is to include a thorough and detailed discussion of the issues relevant to the topic. So because you can talk in depth about this, you know what you're doing. The third way to establish credibility, provide details about your qualifications and the resources available to you on this project. So it's in those details that you start to build this sense that you know what you're doing. The fourth way is to submit a work schedule that your readers can judge is realistic, and again, it's detailed. So if we're hearing one thing over and over again about credibility, it's the fine points that matter. It's the details that matter. By providing those kind of details, you're really saying, hey, I've really thought this through. I've thought about this. I've thought about this little thing, and I'm ready to go. So if I can get funding, if I can get approval, I can make this thing happen. The third way in which you build a persuasive proposal is through emotional appeals. So you've got logic, you've got credibility, now you've got to get people to want to join, want to join with you. So that's emotional appeal. And the ways in which you're going to do this is by using concrete examples and vivid details. You're going to incorporate some figurative language, including comparisons when that's appropriate. These are all ways in which people, you can use language to really get people to adhere to what you're trying to say. Well, here's an example. Again, it's drawn from the proposals to fund this community organization for gardening. And here's how it starts. I am president of the Springfield Organic Growers Cooperative, a small nonprofit group with the goal of creating a sustainable community culture focused on public education and active participation of growing crops. Our humble gardens serve the volunteers, and it carries on from there. I want to focus on that word crops. I've got 4 gardens, but I don't think of myself as growing crops because I don't do acres of stuff. So when you start growing an acre of something, you've really gone into another level. And by describing what they're doing as crops, then I think they're helping to sort of build that sense in a reader that these people are serious about what they're doing. This is a scale that's not normal, not just a little thing. And so there's a suggestion here that there can be a real impact from this group and from this organization. And for that reason, you want to think hard about this proposal. Well, pretty much what I've been saying covers solicited proposals, where people have money, say, and they want to give out grants to organizations, and so they solicit grant applications. I want to talk a little bit now about unsolicited proposals, because they're done a little bit different. They respond to a different rhetorical exigency. So, 4 questions that an unsolicited proposal has to answer. So number one is, what is the problem? So whoever's writing this has to define and explain what they see as a problem, and you have to try to get your readers to see that it's also a problem. The second thing is, why should we solve this problem? And that another way to say that is, why is this significant? Why does it matter? So there's one thing that is a problem, but there's another thing to say, and it's a problem we should solve. We should draw our attention. We should get at this. The third thing an unsolicited proposal, third question that an unsolicited proposal has to answer is, what should we do to solve this problem? Which is to say, what's your solution? So if they were agreeing that it's a problem and that you really should solve it, how are you proposing to solve it? And then they're going to judge that. And then the fourth question you have to answer is, why should we choose the solution you propose? So what are the benefits of your solution? So define the problem, explain why it's significant, describe your solution, and then emphasize the benefits of your solution. Now in the chapter towards the end, we do have a section called Formatting a Proposal, in which we give a way to organize and format a proposal document. And that is problem statement, solution description, methods, qualifications and resources, the work schedule, budget if that's appropriate, and then some kind of call to action. Now, in working with grant writing over a decade or so, what happened, it seemed to me, was that many, many organizations were asking for applications via the internet, of course, and then they would give a text box for people to fill in. So the application was structured as a series of text boxes to fill in, and they didn't necessarily organize themselves the way I just described. So it's up to the person who's applying for the grant to actually figure out where in those questions that they're answering, what the people are really looking for, the subtext to it. So I think that's the way you really have to think about those basic questions we were talking about, which is, why is this a good solution? What is my solution? Why is it a good one? And then how am I going to solve it? Those kinds of things. RFPs, particularly in a government context, are a different animal. So you have to read and respond to what's sometimes called the quote-unquote contract opportunity, read the details for the bid you must prepare, and then prepare the proposal documentation. So there's 3 different kinds of things here. So you have to determine what kind of proposal is requested, and there's a variety of them, identify the evaluation criteria that are given in the RFP, and then determine what kinds of information to include in your proposal. Well, thanks for listening. To get a copy of our book, go to broadviewpress.com. That's Business Communication Rhetorical Situations. And for more links to podcasts and resources for instructors, go to our website, wecanwrite.ca.